There are no good stories coming out of the situation in Turkey and Syria, and this is one very directly related, unfortunately, to the Islamic State and terrorism in the region. During the earthquake, which also affected a town in northeast Syria called Rajo, a prison called the Black Prison, so nothing to do with black sites, it was just the name of the prison is Black Prison. There was a mutiny of the inmates, about 2,100 inmates in that prison, 1,300 of which are ISIS fighters, actually men who are in prison because they're fighters, not supporters, actual fighters. 20 of them escaped. Now, this sounds small compared to 2,100 inmates making a mutiny, but each of them, and this is the other really bad news on this, each of them paid between $1,000 and $10,000 to be let out of the prison. Now, A, this is really concerning. Who is accepting this money from ISIS fighters in Syria? And B, how do inmates get $1,000 to $10,000 to pay anyone while they are in prison? Which really shows a couple of things that are really important here. Number one, you must not forget thousands of hardened ISIS fighters and thousands of women, some of them really culpable as well, right? Court cases in Germany of returning women have overwhelmingly showed that women are not just victims. Several of them were actually hardened ISIS supporters involved in slavery, involved in killings, involved in the Hizbah, the religious police. So these individuals are still in camps and in prisons inside Iraq, inside Syria. Apparently, this is not a situation that is very well maintained, as me, the UN, many people, the American government have pointed out for a number of years already. Now we have apparently already gotten to the point that ISIS prisoners have large amounts of cash that if the needs be, they can access. Plus we do have prison breaks fairly regularly in Syria now. We have escapes from camps where the Kurdish forces hold prisoners. So this is a real time bomb that is ticking here in Syria.
So this is very scary. This is also something reminiscent of what you've told us many times in the past, and that is that the world seems to be turning away from the reality that terrorism is still there and it can rise up at any time. So these 20 with money to pay to get out of prison, and you know, there's that huge question about where that came from. Then there's the question about who gave it to them, you know? So take us a little bit further down the road on this story so we can figure out, you know, the connection here.
Yeah, so when the caliphate disintegrated under military pressure in 2019, in particular Kurdish forces, and I'm talking about the Syria situation, I'm not talking about the Iraq situation, it was a little bit more organized, but the Turkish forces inside Syria, a non-recognized force, neither by Syria, obviously, but also not by the international community. So they are not a government, not a state, took custody of a lot of Syrian, Iraqi, but also international, including European and Middle Eastern members of the Islamic State, fighters, supporters, their wives, their children. Since that time, really, many governments have been asked by the UN, by others, to repatriate their compatriots. Some countries, some in astonishingly Central Asian countries, have repatriated everyone. Some have repatriated parts of them, Tunisia. Some European countries like Germany and France have only repatriated women and children, and only the women if they had children, because they were by, you know, law required to bring the children home because they're underage and therefore not culpable. This leaves a large number of Syrian, Iraqi and foreigners in the custody of the Kurdish forces, which cannot get international help because they're not a recognized government. And there is a very slow and not really efficient trip and trickle back of these fighters to their home countries, which means the Syrian forces are at their limits. There is talk about a Turkish invasion potentially, across the border in Syria anytime soon for a couple of months already. There is now this earthquake, which will definitely stretch their resources. But these really dangerous individuals are still there. And we are expecting, with all of this going on, the Kurdish forces to not only take care of the Syrian prisoners, for which you could make a case, but also for everyone else, right? So why are there still Germans? Why are there still Brits? Why there are still Irish there, right? Or Italians or French? This is an unsustainable situation. If these people come out, the reason why terrorism is not over in Syria is because the terrorists are still there. There's still enough weapons, there's still enough ability to train, there's still enough ammunition or explosive materials that the Islamic State could rematerialize. And the fact that these prisoners had this amount of money per head, so this is not one time, each one of them paid between $1,000 to $10,000, means there is ample resources there to restart the organization if you get the fighters back.
So that's my next question. Did this money come from ISIS? Did it come from the money that essentially ISIS disappeared with? Is that where you think
that's the working money? That's the working assumption, right? But on top of that, of course, Al-Hol camp, which is the biggest camp of that variant within the Turkish, within the Kurdish controlled areas, is now, at least my former colleagues at the Security Council call it now, a somewhat of an administrative center, at least the part of the camp which only houses women and children, the part of the camp that houses international women and children, now seems to have become a somewhat of an administrative center that obviously receives money from friends, supporters, and families in the West, sending it via Havala to the camp. And then the camp, the international part of the camp, apparently distributes some of that money not only internally, but also to the outside to pay for exactly this kind of situations, i.e. bribe your way out of prison, bribe your way out of a prison camp.
This is absolutely stunning. I mean, I think I was stunned before some years back when we heard that ISIS actually had $1 billion, but we saw them knocking over banks and taking over almost a whole country or two, you know, with Iraq and Syria. But the fact that this kind of money is still out there and these 20, tip of the iceberg, right? So this seems to suggest some very bad things to take place. Do you get the sense that there is mobilization or organization underway within the group, within the organization, to try to make a return or rise again?
Well, luckily, that's the good news of the story, right? ISIS in Syria is still under pressure, right? So it's under pressure from American forces. And you've seen they lost a couple of caliphs in short order in the last year. Also, the Kurdish forces are still there, you know, as bad as it is. But the Iranian and the Russian forces are still there to a certain extent. The Assad regime is not really friendly with them. And they have a competitor in Idlib, HTS, a former, in my opinion, still active Al-Qaeda affiliate, i.e. the competition is also there. So it's not that easy to reconstitute itself. But when ISIL had $1 billion as a war chest, they also had to run major cities, infrastructure, water, electricity. None of this is necessary now. All they have to finance now is their fighters to exert violence, i.e. weapons, arms, ammunitions, weapons, ammunitions, and explosive materials, and their salaries. That is the cheapest version of an insurgency or of a terrorist group that you have. So they don't need $1 billion in order to reconstitute themselves. What they still, they have still an active cell network. What they do need in order to become a real factor again in Syria or in Iraq is A, the experienced fighters that are still in the camps, in the prisons, at least a part of them, they need back. And B, social, political disorder, right? So in Iraq, we still have political turmoil to a certain extent. And after what just happened in Syria, the big earthquake, I'm not sure if the governance structures in Syria are going to be more stable after a massive earthquake kills, you know, over 10,000 people now on the Turkish and the Syrian side.
It's hard to ask, it's hard to say what to do next, but I need to ask this question because, you know, we kind of see this happening, but we don't see any kind of massive movement or anything that a government or a country can attack right away? Or is there a way in which this can be stopped?
Look, I mean, ultimately stop, no, maybe, but we can mitigate the risks better than we do right now. So the German government says everyone who wants to come back from Syria is already back. That, in my opinion, negates the fact that we're talking about German terrorists. So I'm not quite sure why they have the right to decide that they want to stay out of prison outside Germany. So we, of course, we should take them back. The Europeans should, all of them should take their even male fighters back. I understand it's a difficult political argument to make that you do hardened fighters who are radicalized terrorists and you bring them back. But I would assume that the resources in Germany or France or Italy or Spain or Portugal or Britain or Ireland are greater to deal with these smaller number of individuals than all of the individuals being taken care of by the Syrian forces in Syria without much international help and with now an additionally weakened infrastructure because of the earthquake. I mean, Syria wasn't a nice place before the earthquake because of this horrific war that's been going on for so long. Now it's definitely an infrastructure problem where people will die of hunger and thirst soon if things don't change very quickly, which is very unlikely to do. So we have the ability to take at least those individuals back. And I do not feel that terrorists have a right to choose whether they want to stay out of prison or not. We don't give them the right when they're on German territory. We shouldn't give them the right when they are in Syrian territory.
Hans, last thing. I get the sense that there's a clock ticking here, and each second that ticks away is one second that we're closer to a disaster. And that disaster is what you pointed out at the very beginning of this discussion. So how far away do you get the sense that we are from some kind of problem, shall we say?
It always comes in waves, right? So the problem is the world is never an uncomplicated place and there's never just one problem. So obviously now Ukraine is the big security problem for all over Europe. These groups tend to have a lot of time on their hands and tend to have a lot of patience. Al-Qaeda operated in Afghanistan years before the big strike happened. USS Cole or the embassy bombs in 1998. So they don't really have a time limit until they have to do the next big attack. The problem is, if we do let these things fester, and we've talked about Afghanistan, we talked about Africa, we're talking now about Syria, there are just too many places in which we let these things get out of hand. And waiting until we have a couple of, or more than a couple, dead Germans or dead Americans or dead British individuals in our cities on our hand is really not a good strategy. We tried that in the 1990s, and it really didn't help us at the 11th of September 2001. So why do we make the same mistake again? This is a problem we now, at this point, can deal with. We shouldn't wait until, again, it requires a defeat ISIS coalition.
Dr. Hans-Jacob Schindler, Senior Director of the Counter-Extremism Project, J.J. Green, WTOP News.